The Greenhouse Show on KSL News Radio.
Welcome back to The Greenhouse Show on KSL News Radio. We promised to take more calls here, Ton. I got some things I want to talk about. We're going to save them and take some calls here. Paul's patiently been waiting on the line. And Paul, you're calling in from Magna, and you got a question about your lawn.
Yeah, I've started developing these brown spots. I thought it was due to I'd cut back on watering a couple summers ago because of the drought. And they, you know, were asking us. So I was doing minimal watering. But then this summer, I'm like, oh, I need to water more. And but these spots just became larger. And, you know, I thought maybe I had insects or fungus, and I had treated for both, just one application one time. But again, now the larger spot has gotten really big. You know, it's probably, it's kind of irregular shape, probably 10 by 6 feet. I posted some pictures on Utah Gardener website, and people are saying it looks like a fungus to them.
You know, that's kind of the equivalent of telling the doctor you have a headache. And then asking why, because all the brown grass is telling you that it's somehow stressed. And to put a picture of brown lawn, you generally can't say what's going on. And if someone's saying, oh, it's a fungus, I usually, and there are situations that you can tell, like necrotic ring spot. But in general, if it's just a brown patch and someone says, oh, that's fungal, they probably don't know what they're talking about. Just because you have to do a lot more testing.
Yeah. Can I take in a sample to, like, you know, Western Gardens or something?
Not really. What I would recommend doing, and you're going to need to wait for spring and when the grass is really growing again, sometime mid-May. On the edge of where those brown spots are, you're going to dig a section about 5-6 inches wide with about 1 inch to 2 inches of soil on the bottom. And then just put that in a brown paper bag inside a box and mail it to the USU pest lab.
You want to take that section, though, where some of the good grass and some of the bad grass.
Yes,
on
you want
side,
some
right?
green and some brown. And if you do an internet search for USU pest lab, it'll bring up the lab. You can download the paperwork so you can just mail it off. And after they receive it, within a week or so, they will get some results back to you. And what I would recommend doing on that test, they will do a few different kinds of potential tests. And I would pay the extra $5 to see if they can culture anything out. So it'd be like $15. But that's the first thing I would do, because having that done is a lot cheaper than a new bag of lawn fungicide, you know, or grub killer. And that's the first thing I would do. If that comes back inconclusive, then the next thing I would do is have the soil tested to make sure there's nothing nutrient wise off with the soil, because that's something that's also sometimes pretty easy to fix.
Okay. That sounds good. So that's it. If this comes back inconclusive, where would I send a soil test? Or is that
USU or BYU
myself?
Will do it, depending. They do about the exact same test. I like USU because they include in their testing soil texture and salinity. And BYU, I think you need to pay for one or the other a few bucks extra. So USU may be $2 or $3 cheaper, but otherwise you're getting the exact same test. Even the professors that run the labs are pretty good friends and not really in cahoots, but they offer very similar testing.
And I could find that just in a Google search.
Yeah, if you do a search of BYU Analytical Lab or USU Analytical Lab or BYU Soil Testing, USU Soil Testing, either way.
All right. I will do that. Yeah, because the Magna soil is kind of poor.
Yeah, it's salty. There's areas out there that they actually are using a grass called alkali grass because of the soil. Because no other grass will survive for turf.
Yeah. All right. Sounds good. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks for your call, Paul. Let's check in now with Janine. Janine, calling you from Eagle Mountain this morning.
Oh, yeah.
How are you?
Hi, how are you?
Doing well. How can we help you out today?
So I got a question for you. I know last winter was severe. We have some butterfly bushes, some Rose of Sharon, and my little limes, and they've been established for probably 4 or 5 years. But, man, I'm telling you, they struggled this year coming back out of the winter. Is there anything specific I can do to prevent the struggle? Because we even lost a couple.
Well, on your butterfly bush, you actually want to cut those back in the spring, almost like a perennial, except for you don't do it now. You do it mid to late March. And just give them a haircut. If they're pretty big, foot to 18 inches off the ground with some hedge trimmers or just some pruners and let them regrow from the base.
Right.
And they'll be
a lot. And we did that.
Okay. But, I mean, they're a zone 6-7 plant, and especially, you know, when we drop with the temperatures we had that quickly. And then I know I live in southern Utah County, and the frost pockets in southern Utah County were 10 below zero. I imagine Eagle Mountain had some similar areas, and that's just not good for burning bush, or not burning bush, but butterfly bush. So that could be some
right.
of it, too.
And I was thinking that would mulch over the top of it. I mean, you leave them big in the fall and you cut them back in the spring, so you can't really cover them or anything. And like the little limes, man, I'm telling you, we thought we were good, but we were not good.
Are you talking like lime mound spirea?
No, the plant that changes color in the fall.
Burning bush?
No, it's a flowering plant that comes up. And the variety
lime
is
to me is a citrus
lime.
Plant. Yeah, I'm not sure what you're referring to, because for me, a lime okay. is a sit like it related to oranges and things. So, yeah, I'm not sure.
It's a variety. I'm sorry about
okay.
that.
Yeah, if I knew the species, I could better help you with it.
Okay.
And maybe a listener will know a ground cover type or shrub that little lime or something is a variety. The only one I can think of is lime mound spirea.
No, it's not a spirea. It's a flowering. It's a bush. It's like your knockoff roses and your okay. butterfly bush, but it's fine. So as far as just leave them big until the spring, cut them back to the ground, about 18 inches, you say, off the ground?
Yes, yeah.
Okay.
And the only other thing I could think of, and I don't know how feasible this would be, but you could partially cut the butterfly bush back and then lift all the branches and secure them at the top with some rope. And then try to put mulch around the base or something. But I just, you know, the butterfly bush, a lot of times the stems die back anyway. And so if you wanted to try, you could and see what happened. It's just not a recommended best practice. But, you know, especially last year, it wouldn't have harmed them any more than the cold we already had.
Yeah. All right. Well, dang, I was hoping that we could save more of them this year. But maybe
I think that we had a year that was a 1 out of 10 year event or a 1 out of 20 year event, and normally those bushes would be just fine.
So those little limes, they're hydrangeas.
Hydrangea, okay.
Okay.
There's not much you can do for them, depending on the species. If they're microphylla, macrophylla, then. The big leaf and little leaf hydrangeas seem to struggle a lot more than other hydrangea. And so it's just one of those, like a Japanese maple, you kind of take your risk when you plant them and you just do your best.
All right. And with those, now we're cutting those back in the spring also. Is that correct?
No. You're not. Actually, I just looked up the little lime hydrangea, and it's paniculata, a newer proven winter's introduction. And so little lime hydrangea, that paniculata is actually quite adapted to our climate. And so you should be able to leave it alone. It does bloom on new growth, and so you could give it a haircut in mid-March and get flowers in the summer.
Okay. All right. Dang it. I hate this struggle. We thought we were so good, but we're not. And now we're just kind of wondering what we could change. But
Doesn't sound like much of anything.
Just the weather, you can't control for the weather, unfortunately. And it sounds like the shrubs you planted would normally be hardy. And that Eagle Mountain area, the farther west you go, the rougher the weather gets, the farther away from Utah Lake.
Okay. All right. Well, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Not a problem. Before we go to break, Dave,
good luck with that. Thank you, Janine.
My wife came home and said, hey, my friend just planted some little devils, and I want some in her yard. So what? There is no such thing as a little devil plant.
We're done having children.
Yes. And I went over and looked at them, and it wasn't even a little devil. I think they were something similar, but they were a little dwarf arborvita. And a lot of times you will see a plant tag, and it'll say little lime or little devil or, you know, columnar spear point. And people just think, oh, this is a spear point. And you have to know the species to really know what it is. And so I totally get somebody saying, oh, it's a little lime, because that's what the tag said.
Right.
And in small letters underneath, it says hydrangea.
We already talked this morning about how people forget what they have.
Yeah.
So they latch on to one little thing from the plant that they can remember. And lime is easy to remember, you know.
Hydrangea is not.
No.
So when I found out it was a hydrangea, I'm like, oh, panicled hydrangea. I know that.
Yeah.
And they should do fine. And so, yeah. And so no criticism of the person not knowing the species.
No, it's what we all do.
Because it's how the plants are marketed.
Yeah. Yeah. And it just kind of reinforces the point you made about, you know, kind of making a map with the record of what these names are.
Saving the tag so that you can read the Latin name if you need to.
Right.
And know what it is.
Right, yeah, pretty standard. Okay, let's jump out and take a break. John, we're going to get to your call on the other side of the break, and we're going to come back with some text as well. And if you've got a question, KSL Talk is the line, and we'll be back with more on The Greenhouse Show on KSL. We're back on the KSL Greenhouse Show. Don, we've got several folks waiting to talk to us, and texting in their questions. Let's go and chat with John, who's calling in from Centerville. Good morning, John.
Good morning. Thanks for the great show.
Thank you.
I have a question, but I have a second short one after. I hope I can.
Oh, yeah, sure. No problem. Go ahead.
Okay. I have a garden plot. It's like, I live on the hillside, you know, sandy soil. About 10 by 20. We haven't gardened it. There's weeds all over for, you know, haven't gardened it for several years. And I want to. Next spring, you have a garden. When's the best time to get rid of the weeds, and how do you get rid of the weeds? Can you use glyphosate, or is that just a little too dangerous considering you're going to have food growing out of there?
Nah, if you Google glyphosate, there's all sorts of very unscientific stuff out there saying that it will make you grow a third arm out of your head and, you know, stuff like that. And limited use of glyphosate, you using it once isn't the problem at all. And
okay, cool.
It is usually soil. It holds on to soil particles very tightly, and then soil microorganisms break it down over a period of about 60 days. And so if you have green weeds out there, you definitely could spray. The other option would be just to go pull them out, cut them down, and rototill the area. And just get started in the spring with a gardening hoe, or if you're wanting to use more natural methods, you know, the use of mulches and things of that nature.
So if you cut it down, how would you cut them down?
Well, you're going to have to choose between spraying and removing.
Okay, because, I'm going to spray.
Yeah, and you only can spray if they're green, because if they're dead already, there's no reason to spray.
And I guess now they'd be going to die probably this week. So
yes, and so you need to get out there between today and Monday.
Okay, cool. Okay, I'll do that. And then just let it, what's left, till it in.
Yeah, in the spring. You can cut it back if you want. Yeah, just sometime when you can work the soil in the spring. Sandy soil can be worked because it's just a lot different than other soils. I grew up with sandy soil.
True.
And as soon as it's not frozen, you can work it.
I'd be a little wary of tilling bindweed in, though.
Yeah, and that's why I would really go in and kill everything first with glyphosate.
I'll do it. Okay, second, this is a short one, I hope. On the north side of my house, I've noticed over the past couple of falls in the grass, in the, you know, the nice grass, blah, 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 about every 1 to 2 feet, so often there's a little mound of dirt. Like, what the heck is that? A little mound of dirt sticking up out about a grass level? Is there some sort of insect in there?
There
something?
Very well could be. Living that close to the bench, there's a beetle called a Praeonis beetle that has a 6 or 7 year life cycle that is the largest beetle in Utah, and they come out of the soil.
It's only in the shady area.
Yeah. And so there are some ground bees that it could be. It could be a lot of different things, but do you have trees in that area?
No, not really.
Okay. It's too, unfortunately, a mound of soil is too broad for me to say what it is.
Might be able to dig that up this time of year and go through the soil and see what it is.
You could see if there's something down there. Right. There are ground bees. There are the Praeonis beetles.
Because at this time, it's probably going to be hibernating.
Just little, like, this little one-inch mounds. They're not like huge mounds.
Yeah,
like
and
one
that's
inch diameter.
My best guess would be some wasps or some ground bees or something. But
dig it up, pop it open.
Yeah, you could take some pictures and email it over to the Davis County USU Extension office, and let their diagnostic team take a look at them. And that would be your best bet. But unfortunately, there's too many things it could be.
Could be. I get it.
Yes. Yeah, I wasn't going to say it, but I'm glad you did.
Well, thanks so much.
Thanks for your call, John.
As usual.
Thank you. Appreciate you being there. We got time for another call, and we've got Ted on the line who's calling in from Orem. Good morning, Ted.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I have an autumn blaze maple tree on the west side of my townhome. It's about 5 or 6 years old, but it's only about 8 feet tall. We moved into the townhome last summer, so about 14 months ago. The leaves were light green, and as it got warmer, the leaves browned. So I tried fertilizing it pretty intensely. That didn't seem to help.
What kind of fertilizer did you use?
It was 16-16-16.
Okay.
So this past spring, I thought, well, let's go for it. And I tried ironiting it a lot, all around the drip area. And even beyond, and I gave it some more 16-16-16, and even some Miracle-Gro, and the leaves still were light yellow, light green, and still browned when the heat comes.
Yeah, iron sulfate is not a good iron source for our soils. For the 10 or 20 bucks you spent, I would have rather had you buy fireworks or went to Wendover for... So,
okay.
Let me give you a recipe to try this spring.
Okay.
And so I hope my USU colleagues are not really listening, because anyway, so you're going to want Miller Farra Plus, and that's going to cost you $20-25 bucks a can for a pound, but Miller Farra Plus, F-E-R-R-I-P-L-U-S, you are going to want a liquid humic acid. So liquid humate. You're also going to need a bottle of liquid micronutrients.
So I need those three things?
And you're going to need more. And so we might have to hold you over, though, because we need to finish this. So let's hold you through the news, and we'll get back on the air at the top of the hour.
Okay, so let's put Ted on hold, and we'll come back and pick you up on the other side of the news. We've only got about 10 or 15 seconds here, Ted. Sorry about that, but we will hold you over. And we are going to break now for news, traffic, and weather at the top of the hour. And when we come back, we're going to finish up Ted's call and talk with you and have more for you on The Greenhouse Show on KSL News Radio.